So this is ways to have fun with the understanding the Dharma. And can you hear me okay? Is that right? All right, great. So I really like Dharma talks that have fun titles, and I've noticed the ones from the Clear Mountain Monastery. Are you familiar with those folks? It's a virtual monastery. They've got, it seem to have a monopoly on fun titles. There's much to be said for wordless silence. Unitarianism without the you. My personal favorite, monk life, less dreadful than I thought. It's fun when serious matters are offered in a new light or with a twist. There was this former Google jolly good fellow, Chade Meng Tan, you may have heard of him. He said, certain times when I hear or read something profound, it makes me laugh. Not because it's silly or ha-ha funny, but because it reflects a surprising, subtle truth that strikes a vaguely familiar chord in a totally unexpected way. A good Dharma talk always evokes some laughter, in my opinion. Personally, I can't imagine the Dhamma without laughter. So I hope we'll get some laughter tonight. But before launching into stories and jokes, to prevent my being accused of blasphemy or somehow being excommunicated, I prepared a serious introduction to this topic. Humor comes in many forms. There's humor in the Pali Canon, but it is serious humor. It's got a serious purpose. Although the origin stories about why the monastics have to follow certain rules can be crass and surprisingly graphic, most of the truly broad humor about Buddhism is found outside the Pali Canon. A little research brought up a lot of jokes and cartoons online, some of which I'll be able to share tonight. Surprisingly, I came across a website called the 10 Funniest Scenes from the Pali Canon. I got all excited about that. That was created by Bhikkhu Sujato, of all people, down in Australia. You might know his Sutta Central website, which is like the gold standard for the suttas online. But the examples that he cites on this 10 Funniest Scenes page are so dry that he had to give an explanation about each one of them, about where's the funny in this. There are boastful beings getting their just desserts. There are religious pretensions getting poked and popped. And there are concepts getting turned on their head in surprising ways, like showing how nonviolence can be a source of strength, even in the midst of a battle. In his book, The Buddha Smiles, Humor in the Pali Canon, Tanisiro Bhikkhu, whom I'll refer to as Ajahn Jeff from now on, points out that the humor in the canon seems aimed at serving a very specific purpose on the path, and that is to develop discernment. And he says it does this in two basic ways. One is to foster a sense of detachment. And the other is to help people realize that even though the practice may seem a little bit challenging on the surface anyway, it is attractive and joyous and brings many, many benefits to all aspects of life. This first type of humor addresses attachment through encouraging detachment. Attachment works in both positive and negative ways. We're attached to getting the things we don't have, but we're convinced we need in order to be happy. And we're equally attached to getting rid of the things we do have that we no longer want or need. And when we lose something we've coveted and finally attained, which is inevitable in this world of constant change, we can be devastated. And if we can't get rid of an affliction, like an illness, perhaps, or a situation that's completely out of our control, we're equally miserable. This is foundational to Buddhism because to put an end to the mental and emotional suffering that results from attachment and clinging is the sole purpose of the Buddhist teachings. He identified that kind of suffering as the primary human problem. He taught that while physical pain is absolutely inevitable in a world like ours and with a fragile physical body, but mental and emotional pain is absolutely optional. The body doesn't care about pain. It's the mind that raises hell about it and sets off the emotional crisis. It was one of the Buddha's great insights that these two types of pain are different. Pain, meaning physical pain, you can't really do much about. But the mental and emotional pain that he called suffering, that's something we can bring under control. Ajahn Jeff says that this aspect of humor applies to most of the topics in the Pali Canon. It encourages people to develop a more detached attitude toward both these forms of desire so that we see through all the glitter and smoke and mirrors and realize that there's less here than meets the eye. Detachment is especially true for humor applied in this way. Detachment is especially true of humor applied in this way. This kind of humor takes the form of irony and satire, mostly, poking fun at things that people usually take too seriously, like my script. As for using humor in the other way to help people see the great benefits and advantages of following the path and experiencing the happiness and joy and contentment and peace of mind that it produces, that kind of humor, Ajahn Jeff says, takes the form of similes and parables, analogies, and stories of a certain kind. Stories that when the Buddha calls them to mind, it makes him smile. This type of humor also relates to discernment. In this case, the ability to motivate ourselves to do something that we know will lead to good results, but for some reason we don't want to do it, or we keep putting it off. You can read these stories in Ajahn Jeff's book. It's online. It's free. It's called The Buddha Smiles. It's on his website, dhammatalks.org. They're too long and drawn out to share tonight, and they're not really LOL funny. The humor there is most likely to evoke a wise or a warm smile rather than a belly laugh. And I always thought the smile on the Buddha's face when we see the Buddha image, I thought it was because he was in jhana and in bliss, but no, maybe not. You know, just thought of some nice story. I don't know. Bhikkhu Sujato's explanations about what was funny in those 10 stories was very helpful for me. I really couldn't see it without his help there. I and probably most of us, we've been conditioned by a long line of amazing comedians who have left us a very rich treasury of direct and obvious and very funny stories and routines. Thinking back, we had the Marx Brothers, we had Lucille Ball and Carol Burnett. We had Richard Pryor and George Carlin, Robin Williams, just to name a few. And this is what people have come to expect. It's fast, it's punchy, often hilarious. It's far removed from the Buddha's dry, deadpan sense of humor. I keep thinking of Buster Keaton, famous deadpan, or Jack Benny, perhaps. This is what people have come to expect. And on top of that, we're completely dependent on the translators. And the Buddha was a master debater and orator, and he was a highly educated man. And we're told there's a lot of wordplay in the Pali Canon, but it's all in Pali. And so all we get is footnotes telling us about it because you can't really translate that. Well, I hope this has been serious enough. So I can tell some jokes now, but there's one more thing. According to Ajahn Jeff, the humor in the canon comes in four different ways. It comes from either the reported speech of the Buddha himself, the reported speech of his noble disciples, his arahant disciples, the reported speech of ordinary people, both lay and monastics, and from the compilers of the canon themselves, who finally wrote all this stuff down, and they had, you know, they had to create a narrative, so they would use some humor to do that. In trying to find funny things the Buddha himself said, I had a bit of a problem with that. I couldn't find too many of those, but I've got three examples here. The first one I'm going to read from Ajahn Jeff's book, because it's very interesting. The language, when the Buddha talks, he may say something that's amusing or funny, but the language itself kind of dilutes the humor. You might even forget about the humor. So I just want you to get a little just sense about this. My thought about that and why that may be is because it's probably in the service of detachment. Because after all, when at the end of the path, you know, we have to give everything up, including the path itself. So we get a little taste of that. Anyway, this is called The Donkey. It's from the Anguttara Nikaya. Monks, it's just as if a donkey were following right after a herd of cattle saying, "I too am a cow, I too am a cow." Its color is not that of a cow. Its voice is not that of a cow. Its hoof is not that of a cow, and yet it still keeps following right after the herd of cattle saying, "I too am a cow, I too am a cow." In the same way, there is the case where a certain monk follows right after the Sangha of monks saying, "I too am a monk, I too am a monk." He doesn't have the other monk's desire for undertaking the training in heightened virtue. He doesn't have their desire for undertaking the training in heightened mind or concentration. He doesn't have their desire for undertaking the training in heightened discernment. And yet, he still keeps following right after the Sangha of monks saying, "I too am a monk, I too am a monk." So you should train yourselves. Strong will be our desire for undertaking the training in heightened virtue. Strong will be our desire for undertaking the training in heightened mind. Strong will be our desire for undertaking the training in heightened discernment. That is how you should train yourselves. So it's not laugh out loud funny, but it's fun. But there is fun. It's humorous. There's an origin story for the Vinaya rule about why monks should not drink alcohol. And in this story, the Buddha tells the story and then he takes a kind of a light swipe at this monk whose prowess with psychic powers led to pride, and that led to bad judgment. The venerable Sagata had previously proven his high spiritual attainments by doing, this is a summary by the way, by doing psychic battle with a fire-breathing serpent. In appreciation of this, the local villagers decided that on his alms round, they would give him alcohol. So he would go around to the different houses and everybody would give him a little bit of this. He ends up hopelessly drunk. The monks find him and carry him to the Buddha. They lay him down with his head facing the Buddha, but he's inebriated. He doesn't know where he is. He squirms around and finally he's there with his feet facing the Buddha, which is a very disrespectful thing. So The Buddha turns to the Sangha at this point, and he says, "The Venerable Sagata used to be a demon slayer, but right now, could he even do battle with a salamander?" So I was looking for one-liners from the Buddha, and I found one. I found one. This is a remark the Buddha makes to an attendant, to his attendant. This was before Ananda was his attendant, so an earlier part of the Buddha's life. The Buddha gave this really inspiring discourse, and the attendant got goosebumps all over, and his hair all stood on end. And afterwards, he said, "Marvelous, marvelous. What do you call this talk that made all my hair stand on end?" And the Buddha said, "Oh, you can call it the hair-raising talk." And that's not the way it's listed in the canon. It's called the Great Discourse on the Lion's Roar. That's from Majjhima Nikaya 12. There were also amusing stories about the monks. This one is even kind of slapstick. It's my favorite. It's the Junya Sutta from the Udana, which is a part of the Pali Canon, a small part. It's called exclamations. The Buddha says, exclaims something. this is about Sariputta. Sariputta and Moggallana, they're dear friends, and they're together, and Sariputta's sitting in deep meditation on a full moon night. A couple of demons are flying by, and one of them sees Sariputta's head. He just got his head shaved, so he's got this bald head, and the moonlight shining down his bald head. And the yaksha, the demon, he says, "I think I'm going to whack this guy." And the other one says, "Oh, no, I don't think you should do that." And he says, yeah, I'm going to do this. So he's got this huge club, and he whacks Sariputra with it. And it says in the sutta that this blow was powerful enough to kill an elephant or to split a mountain in half. But Sariputra doesn't feel anything. But Moggallana, who has psychic powers, he saw everything. So a little while later, when Sariputta finishes meditating, Moggallana says to him, "Oh, my friend Sariputta, did you notice anything unusual while you were meditating? How do you feel?" Sariputta says, "Oh, well, my friend, I feel fine. I'm comfortable, but, you know, I do have a slight headache." So there are also forms of black humor in the canon, and surprisingly enough, this apparently is not uncommon. But there's always a deep lesson behind it. The one I'm going to talk about is sort of like right out of Alfred Hitchcock. It's got a real crazy plot twist at the end, and it's startling and kind of gruesome, but funny at the same time. Now, this is about one of the nuns named Subha, and she's walking through a mango grove, and she's been stalked by this guy, and he suddenly just blocks her path. And she says, "What have I done wrong that you suddenly are blocking my path? I'm pure, without blemish. And you, with your mind agitated and impassioned, why do you stand in my way?" He says, "You're young. You're not bad looking. Why are you a nun? What point is there in going forth? Throw off your robe. Let's delight in the flowering grove." And she says, "What do you see when you look at me? You who are out of your mind, what do you see when you see me?" And then he starts waxing rapturous about her eyes. Oh, nymph, your eyes are like those of a fawn. They're like those of a sprite in the mountains. Seeing your eyes, my sensual delight grows all the stronger. There's nothing dearer to me than your eyes." Well, she knows he's about to rape her. But before she takes protective action. She gives him a very powerful what for Dharma talk. She says, try to seduce one who knows the master's teaching and you will suffer. In the midst of praise and blame, pleasure and pain, my mindfulness stands firm. I'm a follower of the one well gone. I ride the vehicle of the Eightfold Way. Your vision has been distorted. Your perception is meaningless, like an evaporated image, a magic show. You run blind after what is unreal. Here, take this eye. It's yours. And she gouges out one of her eyes and hands it to him. And this actually does the trick. The text says, straight away his passion faded right there. Which is to say that he lost his arousal. And he actually repents and begs for her forgiveness. Okay, well, she goes to the Buddha, and the text says, as soon as she saw him, she was healed. Her eye became as it was before. So the Buddha used his psychic powers to heal her. Well, so far we've had a fairly high-minded discussion, including some scholarly thoughts. So now it's time for a couple of fart jokes. I think I found a fart joke in the Majjhima Nikaya. It's called The Rebuke to Mara, MN50. In this discourse, Mara, the evil one, actually took demonic possession of Moggallana, jumped into Moggallana's body. Now, in the folkloric tradition and religious traditions, if you get possessed, the demon takes over your whole body. This is not what happened here. Mara, for whatever reason, went into Moggallana's bowels. Moggallana sits down to meditate and he says, oh, my stomach feels like it's full of beans. And that's as far as we get. This is as close as we get to it. But you can imagine. I did see a YouTube video years ago where the Dalai Lama was explaining when you're riding on an airplane how to fart so nobody knows what happened. And of course, he's giggling hysterically, which is what he likes to do. Researching this a little bit, I did find that there is a very famous Zen fart joke. Would you like to hear that? It's called The Poet and the Master. During the Song Dynasty, there was a celebrated Buddhist poet named Su Dong Po, who was close friends with a brilliant Chan master. Chan would be Zen in the Chinese tradition. Chan master named Fo Ying. One day, Su Dong Po paid a visit to the temple, but Master Fo Ying was out. Su Dong Po sat down in the master's study to wait, but he got bored after a while. He saw there was some paper there, so he started writing some poetry. He's a poet, you know, and he signed his poem. He signed it, Su Dong Po, the great Buddhist who cannot be moved by even the combined forces of the eight worldly winds. Now, you know the eight I think Lee already knows what's coming here. The eight worldly winds, you should know, are loss and gain, pleasure and pain, praise and blame, fame and disrepute. Okay, those are the eight worldly winds. So Master Fo Ying comes back and he finds the poem and he just writes something on it and sends the poem back to Su Dong Po. So it's, they bring the thing to Su Dong Po, and he opens it up to read. He's very excited to read what the master wrote. The master wrote, rubbish! What you have said is not better than a fart. Well, Su Dong Po is furious. He immediately goes back to the temple. He has to cross a river to get there. He goes back to the temple, and he comes up to Fo Ying, and he actually grabs him by the arm and he shouts at him, why did you write fart on my poem? What right have you to denounce me in such language? Am I not a devout Buddhist who cares only for the Dharma? Are you so blind after knowing me for so long?" And Master Fu Ying looked at him quietly for a few seconds, and then he smiled. He slowly said, "Oh, yes, you are Su Dong Po, the great Buddhist who claims that the combined forces of the eight winds can hardly move him an inch, but you've been blown all the way across the river just by one fart." There are a lot of other good funny things in Zen teachings. There's an old Zen saying, in matters of religion, most people prefer chewing the menu to actually eating the food. A student went to see his meditation teacher and said, "My situation is just terrible. I feel distracted most of the time. My legs ache. I'm repeatedly falling asleep." The teacher said, "It will pass." A week later, the student returned to his teacher. "Oh, my meditation is great. I'm feeling ecstatic and joyful. I'm feeling so alive." And the teacher said, "It will pass." Yeah. Okay. On the terrace of a small temple high up in the mountains, an old Zen Buddhist monk stood next to his much younger disciple. On a dark, dark night, they just stood out there contemplating the void, the great emptiness. And the old monk said, "My son, one day all of this will be yours." Chan Master Fayen Wenyi interrupted an argument among some monks concerning the relationship of the mind to reality. He posed a question. He said, "Over there, there's a large boulder. Do you say that it is inside your mind or outside your mind?" Well, one of the monks said, "Well, from the Buddhist standpoint, everything is an objectification of mind. I would then say that that stone is inside my mind." Feiyan said, "Well, then your head must be pretty heavy." So I've saved the best ones for last. This is from an ancient document that's called the Sayings of the Buddha, of the Jewish Buddha. I don't have time to explain all the Dharma significance of this, but maybe you'll appreciate it. Some of you have heard this before. If there is no self, whose arthritis is this? Be here now. Be someplace else later. Is that so complicated? Drink tea and nourish life with the first sip, joy, with the second sip, satisfaction, with the third sip, peace, with the fourth sip, a Danish. Wherever you go, there you are. Your luggage is another story. Accept misfortune as a blessing. Do not wish for perfect health or a life without problems. What would you talk about? Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. Forget this, and enlightenment's going to be the least of your problems. And finally, deep inside you are 10,000 flowers. Each flower blooms 10,000 times. Each blossom has 10,000 petals. You know, you might want to see a specialist. So So I want to save time for that we can have some talk about this, but I do want to tell you that I've heard that reincarnation is making a comeback. And I wonder if you heard the one about the meditators who went out into the field. There's a pasture, and there were cows out there in the pasture, and they were sitting there, and they were doing om. They were doing om. We don't do om very much here, do we? You know, let's do some om. Okay, we can do some harmonizing. Okay, on three. Ready? One, two, three. Om. Om. Let's do one more. Om. Well, the cows were hearing this. And one cow turns to the other and says, "That's really strange. They've got it backwards." The last one is a riddle. Let's see if anybody knows the answer. So down at the coroner's office, they had a Buddhist coroner. But people kept complaining about the death certificates he returned to them. And they finally had to fire him. Does anyone know why they had to fire the Buddhist coroner? Why? Anybody on Zoom know? Well, it was because, you know, on the certificate, there's this place where you write in cause of death. Well, people were really upset because no matter what the situation was, he kept in writing in birth. Oh dear. So I've got some cartoons. I'll have to put them out on the table for you later, but maybe we can open it up now. And Zoom folks, you can unmute yourselves, and maybe some of you know some good stories or whatever. We have anything we want. If nobody has anything, I can show you some cartoons. But so let me see. I can't. Let's put it on view. Speaker view. Does that bring everybody up? No. Stan, I don't know how to, on our big screen, I don't know how to make it so we can see everybody. Great. Yeah, we got two microphones. Yeah, anyone on Zoom want to say anything or has a good joke for us or anything like that? Oh, Nick has something.
Many of you probably heard this, but do you know what the Buddha said to the hot dog vendor?
I make do know, me, but I won't. But I won't say.
Make me one with everything.
Yes. So I can't see everybody on Zoom at the same time. So if you have something, please just unmute and share with us. I'm sorry, Randy. Somebody has a hand. Sen and Mary from Tucson. Yeah, can you unmute?
I think we are unmuted.
Wait a minute.
I can hear you.
Can we hear you?
Yeah, so Steve.
Oh, yeah, it's very, very soft, Mary.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Oh, like this one here? Okay. It's up all the way.
All right.
Try again, Mary.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. It's really low, so speak loud.
Oh.
It's okay.
Well, Sen and I are commenting that since you left Tucson, Arizona, which gets up to 112 in the summertime, you are increasingly full of hot air. And we are wondering when and if this will pass.
I'll take it as a rhetorical question, okay?
I got one.
Yeah, go ahead.
The one that I told you about was the monk reading a card, and it said, "Not thinking of you."
Thank you, David. Anybody else? Got a couple of minutes. I can show you a couple of cartoons. The monk is sitting there meditating on the floor, and the little bubble, thought bubbles, with a chair. Right. Here's for Zoom. You can see it. I really like this one. It's a line, a long line of monks, and they're walking into a building, and the building says self storage. Self storage. Oh. And this one is cute. The monk is holding up a sign: "The end is in sight." This is a little hard to see, but two monks are sitting there, and one of them's all bandaged up. They're meditating, and one of them just says to him, "Try not to think about it." And a monk is sitting up on the mountaintop. He's writing a letter. He says, he's writing a letter to bad karma. He says, "Dear bad karma, to assist you at this busy time, I've drawn up a list of people you might have missed." Then there were these two that were really kind of different. Monk is sitting there, and he says, "Whoa, this is it. I've finally killed my ego." And then the next frame he's sitting, and the next frame he's sitting, and then the last frame he's sitting, but he's thinking, "I'm so much better than everybody else." And then this one was really strange. This guy was probably, it might be a Zen, I don't know. He's got a ball, you know, he kind of looks like a Zen practitioner. He says, "Always seek the approval of others. It fills the emptiness inside you. It also makes the emptiness larger so it can hold more approval." This cartoon is called Buddhist Photo Albums. The two monks are sitting together and they're looking at the photographs. And one says, "Oh, this was when I was a fruit fly in Istanbul. Of course, we called it Constantinople back then. That was by far my shortest life. Oh, and here's me in the monarch butterfly migration of 1884. I think a sparrow ate me." Couple is there with the lawyer. "As you both know, your late uncle believed in reincarnation. I'm sorry to say, he left everything to himself." One guy says, "Knowing my luck, I'll be reincarnated as me again." Two seagulls are contemplating the seashore. One says, "Where do you think we're headed?" The other says, "Well, I was going to get some fries on the pier." And the other says, no, I mean the big picture. What is the culminating result of consciousness? Where does this path take us? The other one says, well, I still feel it has something to do with those fries on the pier. Couple more. They're in a line, right? Long line, screaming baby, the whole thing. One person says to the other, I want to learn to live in the moment. Just not this moment. Some other moment, like a moment on the beach. Two women are talking to each other. One says, you know, he took me to a restaurant. Oh, what was the name of the restaurant? It was called Karma. What do they serve there? Just desserts.
That's a good one.
Finally, here's the last one. The family is gathered at the deathbed of the patriarch, right? Everybody's all sad and everything. And the patriarch says, I watched a lot of TV. I ate a lot of fast food. I sold more laminated countertops in June of 1973 than anyone else in the Southeast region. My work here is done. And my work here is done. Thank you, everybody. Thank you very much.